Hey, well, listen, you're listening to Radio Recovery. I'm Johnny and she's Denise, or vice versa.
We'll just switch names for the day.
Yeah, we'll just switch names. No, we won't do that.
No.
It's a good idea, though. Maybe future show.
Right.
And we're here talking about recovery. We're an outreach of the Latah Recovery Center, which is on Main Street near 6th, right next to One World Cafe. And what's the hairdresser down there?
Oh, so yeah. So my friend Tammy works at Wackadoos. And let me tell you, my hair, I absolutely love it. It's very pretty, isn't it?
Yeah, it is very nice.
Yeah, it's very, very nice. So I say go in and see Tammy and get your hair cut, because, or anything that you need done. She does my girls' hair, and we all look lovely. So,
okay. Well, there we go. A little shameless promotion
right?
for you, Tammy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But anyway, Latah Recovery Center, we're an outreach for them. And Latah Recovery Center, you know, helps people in recovery from drugs and alcoholism, and as well as will help you find ways to get help with mental health issues, domestic abuse. If you have a problem that's weighing heavy on your mind, go in there and talk to those people.
Yeah.
They'll point you in the right direction.
They definitely will.
I decided for us that we're going to talk about something that's should be near and dear to everyone in our listening audience here and beyond in the world of iTunes land and Google. But we're going to concentrate on the local area. I'm going to talk about opioid abuse and heroin abuse. And I'm going to start out reading some really boring facts, but they're eye-openers, or at least they were for me. And this is from the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta, and these are the key points from their article on regarding overdose and emergency room visits. During the period from July 2016 to September 2017, emergency department visits among those aged 11 years of age or older for opioid overdoses in the United States. I washed my tongue this morning.
It takes 5 minutes to warm up.
There you go. Overdoses in the United States increased 29.7% overall and 34.5% in 16 states with high prevalence of overdose mortality. Significant rate increases were found in 5 Midwest region states, largest in Wisconsin at 109%, and in 3 Northeast regions, largest in Delaware, 105%. Non-significant decreases, less than 10%, were found in 3 Northeast states. In the Southeast, rates increased in North Carolina 31% and decreased in Kentucky by 15%. Every demographic group reported substantial rate increases, including males 30%, females 24%, and all persons in age groups 25 to 34 at 31%, 35 to 54, 36%, and 55 and older, 32%. And that's just mind-boggling.
So it doesn't matter what age.
Yeah, you can be absolutely a grown-up adult. 36, a 32% increase, 55 and older, and that scares the crap out of me because I'm in that demographic.
Yeah.
And the things that are really shocking to me is largest increases, Wisconsin, the Midwest.
Yeah.
You know?
It's not even like it's, you
it's
know.
It's not New York. It's not
LA. It's not
LA,
California.
It's not Chicago. It's Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And Delaware.
Well, Delaware, I'm from New Jersey, so I mean, I haven't lived there in a long time.
Right.
But I think that that area, New Jersey, is definitely a little bit of a rough area. from what I've experienced,
right,
as far as that kind of stuff. But I'm not trying to pick on Jersey.
But New Jersey doesn't even enter into it, at least not in these really large numbers.
Yeah.
Delaware, the smallest, or no, Rhode Island's the smallest. Delaware's got to be close to the second. Mm-hmm.
There are small places there.
It's outrageous. It's crazy. And, and the causes are multifaceted. I don't have the, exact statistical numbers here.
Right, because these statistics would be for people who are taking opiate. Yeah, they're taking opiates by prescription or illegally, correct?
Right.
We don't know. I mean,
right,
they don't give that. So that could be anyone even who is legitimately just simply taking a prescription?
Well,
overdose, though.
They would have to be taking prescription drugs, one would assume.
Too much.
Greater than the amount prescribed.
Right. So abusing it. So basically, typically, this would probably be taking your prescription or getting them illegally, but you've taken too much. So you've abused it for whatever reason.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Okay. Exactly. And I'm sure there's some real small numbers, which are, children accidentally ingesting.
Or like possibly if you're older and you just, maybe you thought you...
You mix up your dosages
And it was an accidental thing. So there can be accidental kind of situations.
But from what I've read in this, these numbers are typically are pointing at
abuse.
People who are abusing the substances for one reason or another, by one method or another. Now, coming here locally, I found part of this article off of, I can't remember who, a television station in southern Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about heroin coming into Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out most of it's coming in, at least southern Idaho, is coming in from Utah, from Salt Lake City.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a quote from Lieutenant Clint Skinner with the ISP District 5 in Pocatello. It says, every single day someone's tripping to Utah and bringing back heroin. 5 years ago, we were seeing almost none. Now it's the biggest problem we're seeing in southeast Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
We can see anything from users with the tiniest amount to traffickers that have ounces and up to pounds of heroin. In a law enforcement district that heavily focused on methamphetamine possession and trafficking, officers are changing with the time and shifting their focuses to heroin. From 2011 to 2016, state police saw a 958% increase in the number of heroin-positive tested items by state labs, the highest amounts coming from Ada County. We're dealing with several of these incidents every week, Meridian Police Officer Jake Simon said. Out of my last six evaluations, four of those have come up with some kind of opiate in their system. And I presume he's talking about evaluating drivers who are under the influence.
Yeah.
When it comes to heroin trafficking, that's when they're talking about heroin trafficking
The amount, I think, here.
The amounts coming in. Canyon County saw the highest rate increase, but falls fourth in the state behind Ada, Bangkok, Bannock, and Kootenai counties.
Yeah, so this is by us, guys. So just so you know, this is all around us.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's insane. And this goes to, the risk that people are taking. Idaho Code Title 37. In case you didn't know,
heroin's illegal.
Yeah, heroin's illegal.
No prescription for that or anything. It's 100% illegal.
Yeah, all Schedule 1 drugs are illegal in Idaho, marijuana included. But for trafficking drugs, and this specifically addresses heroin. This is from the Idaho Code, Title 37, Food, Drugs, and Oil, Chapter 27, Uniform Controlled Substances, Article 4. And line 6, it says, any person who knowingly manufactures, delivers, or brings into this state, or who is knowingly in actual or constructive possession of 2 grams or more of heroin, or any salt isomer or salt of an isomer thereof, or 2 grams or more of any mixture or substance containing a detectable amount of any such substance is guilty of a felony, which felony shall be known as trafficking in heroin. If the quantity involved, and these are the mandatory minimum sentences.
Yeah, so listen up.
Between 2 to 6 grams, mandatory minimum sentence, 3 years and a $10,000 fine. 7 to 27 grams is 10 years, $15,000 fine. 28 grams or more is 15 years and a $25,000 fine. And the maximum sentence for all of those can be life.
In prison.
In prison. And a $100,000 fine. If you're thinking a couple of grams is really nothing,
think again.
It can be considered trafficking. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've known some heroin addicts. My experience is from long ago and far away. But I know, a couple grams of heroin is a fairly good amount as far as, a street addict is concerned. And, but nonetheless, I've known people who have carried more than that for, their own personal use. And, it doesn't go into specifically, opioid prescription medications and what trafficking would be considered
right,
for
just
that.
Just talk about heroin.
Right. Yeah. I would imagine that the, sentencing and what's going to happen to you
is probably
going to be real similar. Yeah. So yeah. That's the really sad news part of this broadcast is it's here, it's real. And people are dying from it every day. The amount and quantity of use of it is going through the roof. And quite honestly, there's just not a hell of a lot being done about it.
Working on trying to figure out what to do, I guess.
Yeah, for a lot of reasons. And unfortunately, you'll see corporations kind of trying to do a knee-jerk fix to it. I don't have insurance for prescription drug coverage, so I've been using an app called GoodRx. Hmm. And what it does is it allows you to pay a discounted amount. They work with the different drug suppliers, your Safeways, your Rite Aids, your Walmart, Walgreens, all those guys. And they have negotiated amounts that you can pay, and it saves me a lot of money on my prescriptions because I'm old, and the rule is when you're old, you take a lot of prescriptions. Right. I don't make the rules. I just have to live by them.
Your heart and this and that starts not quite going,
it can be a lot of things, most of them embarrassing.
There we go.
I'll just say that and leave it alone.
I've had some embarrassing things already, too, actually. I'll just own that real quick and make you feel a little bit better. Does that help? I own it live,
I appreciate it. But one thing that came up is I do have to take kind of a baby opioid medication. Walmart decided as of June 1st that they would no longer accept this discount program or coupons from anyone for opioids, any sort of opioid medication. They also went further and said, if you have insurance and choose not to use it, you will pay the full retail price for those opioid prescriptions. So they're doing a couple things. It looks like they're trying to track with the insurance companies what kind of
what's going on with the use and the prescriptions
for them. But unfortunately, for someone like me, it just made my medication that I need daily grossly expensive. At the cost of finding out the information. So I get to suffer while the insurance companies gather information. So,
seems like there's two sides of the coin here. It's like, There's situations where there's a legit need for the prescription being given.
Right.
And then on the other hand, I feel like there are times when a doctor's maybe not so cautious about who he gives a prescription to for what's going on. So there's kind of like an imbalance going on, you
think?
Well,
exactly. And I'm sure it's that's rough. Part of it. You mm-hmm. know, I'm looking at it. I'm glad you brought that. I was hoping you would. I was kind of mm-hmm. tossing the ball out there and hoping you True. Would swing. But yeah, no, I'm sure there are doctors who there's a process called doctor shopping mm-hmm. where people who are addicted will go to different doctors. Ah, my back, mm-hmm. you know, oh, right. my whatever. I'm in a lot of pain. And they'll
right.
give them a cursory mm-hmm. examination. And in this day and age of, you know, you got a 15-minute appointment and you're out, or you go to an urgent mm-hmm. care, you know, and in an area like we live in, we got two states you can go to.
And it's super hard to predict who's going to wind up being an addict and then go start searching on the street or just keep, you right. know.
Exactly.
It's like, sorry to jump in, but these no. drugs are just so unpredictable, I feel like. It's like, you know, some people, I've heard of people who take them and they're like, oh, I can't take them during the day. They make me fall asleep. So,
right.
you know, I had the surgery happen or whatever. I can only take them at night.
Right.
Or some people are like, I don't even like the way they feel. I can't take them at all. You
right.
know?
Right.
And then, you know, and then there's, of course, the other end of the spectrum. It just seems like it's so unpredictable. But we do know that there's a huge problem with what can happen, you know?
Right. Exactly.
And then finding the balance for people who actually need them, that aren't abusing them, they're taking them the way they're instructed to be. You know, I mean,
exactly.
It's like the pharmaceutical company was willing to pump it out. But then there's these situations where then they make these rules and it seems I'm very confused.
Right.
Honestly, you're confusing me, Johnny.
Yeah.
Because all the side that I've gotten to from it is like where, you know, I'm listening to my friends and they're getting a prescription. This is over 4.5 years ago.
Right.
I've been in recovery for quite a long time now. But, you know, I mean, they were in their 20s and 30s and stuff. And they had, you know, just free range on it. It felt like, you know. I was weird. So for those of you who don't know, I've been in recovery for over 4.5 years from opiates and methamphetamines. And when I started way back when I was having back problems, I only went into one doctor. They gave me a prescription for, I don't know, a couple weeks or something like that. I made it last like 4 months. But I just had this feeling like I was like, they're not going to prescribe it to me again. You know what I mean? Like most of my doctors were pretty cautious about that kind
right,
of thing. You
right.
know?
And most of
like,
the doctors yeah. I've been to are the same way.
Yeah. Like my chiropractor and stuff, like, you know, she was like, no, no, we don't do that kind of thing. So I just went straight. I don't remember how long the duration of time was that it took me to come across somebody with a prescription of those, which was one of those people that just kind of had free reign. You know, they got a bunch, you know, and they didn't really like them. And then that's where, you know, I...
Oh, kick a brother down.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess maybe, I don't know if I'm supposed to be saying that kind of stuff on the radio, but anyways, don't do that kind of stuff anymore. But it just seems like there's just so many variations in this area of what can happen, you know. And
right.
I'll just speak for myself and say, yeah, I was a total idiot for you know.
Well, I
mean,
know.
I did. I got addicted
yeah.
pretty fast,
and I don't think you need to
really
be,
fast. One prescription,
right? I don't
one
think,
prescription.
I don't think you need to be an idiot to you know, fall victim to addiction mm-hmm. to opioids. You talk to anyone who's a real genuine heroin user, and you will find out that a lot of junkies. Are junkies after their first time.
Right.
Because you inject heroin into your system or smoke it or snort it, it produces a euphoria that cannot be matched. And mm-hmm. if you're out there looking, I mean, this is just addiction 101. If you're out yeah. there looking for an escape, it is probably the most intense escape drug.
Yeah.
Available.
And I think it's also important to mention that, because I agree with definitely what you're saying, that, you know, some people recreate with these kinds of things, you know, variations kinds of things, and life could be actually going pretty smoothly and pretty well and everything like that. But the good time or whatever, you know, however that affects you, that's so enjoyable.
Right.
Then like, so life's really good. You've got your house, you know, you got your job, you got your 2.5 kids, whatever, and your dog and all that kind of stuff, and you know, and things are going really well. You come across this, you know, you're just using it occasionally, whatever, and then eventually it could happen, and it has happened,
mm-hmm.
where then it actually does become a problem down the line. And it's interesting from what I've seen how the correlation between, you know, like addiction starts and you start kind of that kind of becomes your priority. And then all these other things that used to be priorities that were super important, and they are important. It's normal stuff. Everything starts to shift, and you know, the money and the substance, whatever it may be, starts to take lead to everything in your life.
Oh, I can.
And it can be a slow process.
I can pay my water bill mm-hmm. next month.
Yes, absolutely. Oh yeah, yeah. Last time I had an emergency, like they waited an extra 2 weeks. I can do that again. You know what I mean?
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And you start rationalizing. Yeah. Yeah. And you know,
shift stuff around.
Most people that are addicted to opioids, it's pretty easy to self-diagnose. Mm-hmm. Because you know, there's that dope sickness you will get.
Yeah.
As soon as you come off, and you know, the drugs are leaving your system, you're gonna get the sniffles, the shakes, the diarrhea. That you know, mm-hmm. it's all there. It's all real.
It's all real.
And
yeah, that's your body withdrawing.
And so, you know, if you're noticing those symptoms when you stop taking a medication, you know, it's time to mm-hmm. get help. Yeah. And, you know, that's going to be our next topic here coming up in a minute. We're going to go to some music, but mm-hmm. Getting help, what it is, what it looks like, how do you get it, and some positive things that are coming up in the state of Idaho to help finance that, yeah. because that's the problem we're facing right mm-hmm. now is there's not enough beds. There's not enough right. room in rehabs and places where you can go and safely detox. Because I have met tons and tons of people in my life who said, you know, if they had just had a place for me, mm-hmm. if I could have just said any one of a thousand times that I said, please help me. And they said, well, we wish we could, but
yeah, a lot of times
you're going to have to yeah. wait for 2 months.
There can be a wait list.
And,
yeah.
you know, 2 months can be a death sentence.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's like the moment that someone's ready to do it, man, it would be really great if they could then do that at that moment.
Yeah.
You know, so basically there are solutions, and we're going to talk about that. And there's definitely hope. And there's two people in this room right now who have, you know, entered into recovery and gotten past those horrible things where you're sick and it can be done.
And don't want to go back there.
Don't. Never.
There's a little Rolling Stones, Sister Morphine.
You're listening to Recovery Radio on KRFP Moscow Pullman. Why does the doctor
chose things are not what they seem. Please just let me turn my nightmare into dreams. Oh, can't you see I'm fading fast? And that this shot will be my last. Lay a cool, cool hand on my head. Oh, come on, Sister Morphine, you better make her my bed. 'Cause you know, and I know, in the morning I'll be dead.
That was the Rolling Stones, Sister Morphine. Appropriate little tune for our topic of the day, which is opioids, heroin in Moscow, Latah County, Idaho. It's everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's bad stuff. But here's a little... pardon me. I swallowed my tongue. little bit of good news. We talked with Daryl Kine, the director of the Latah Recovery Center back here back in February, about a bill that was being introduced in the Idaho House of Representatives, House Bill 625. And it was introduced, and currently, last time I checked, it was in committee with the, I think it's Health Resources Committee. Probably wrong on that, but if you're interested, you can go to the Idaho Legislature website and look up HB 625. Here's a little statement of purpose and the costs associated with it. This legislation is designed and fund and provide services to prevent and treat opioid addiction in Idaho. This bill imposes on opioid distributors into the state a 1/2 cent tax per MME, which is morphine milligram equivalents, based upon the potency and quantity of various opioid drugs. The State Tax Commission would oversee collection of the tax. The funds would be distributed to several opioid addiction programs in the state, including the Board of Pharmacy for Education and Medical Provider Outreach, to the public health districts to fund local recovery centers related to treatment and prevention of opioid addiction, and that would include things like the Latah Recovery Center and the other recovery centers.
There's eight or nine of them in the state.
Mm-hmm. Correct. and to the Division of Behavioral Health for its medication-assisted treatment program specific to opioid addiction, and any balance to the Department of Health and Welfare for other opioid treatment and prevention programs. And when you talk, whenever you say tax in Idaho, they say no thank you. However, when I ran the numbers on this, a 0.5 cent tax per MME, morphine milligram equivalent, this is where what it works out to. And I've calculated it based on the most common over-the-counter opioids, because obviously they're not going to tax heroin coming in. So on the over-the-counter drugs, a real common one is hydrocodone. That's your post-minor surgery wisdom tooth,
broken arm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Severe back pain type deal. And on a 5 milligram 300, which is it's a combination of hydrocodone and Tylenol, mm-hmm. but on 5 milligram hydrocodone dosage, the added cost per dose per pill would be 3 cents. It's actually 2.5 cents, but my program rounds up mm-hmm. after the third decimal on money. So the added cost per a typical prescription of these, and I base it on a 7 day, three tablets a day for 7 days, that's 21 tablets, is a whopping 53 cents.
Yeah. So this isn't like some crazy huge tax. I mean,
no. And then it goes up the, you know, the higher dose, 10 milligram, mm-hmm. you're talking about $1.05, for a 7 day, prescription
of oxycodone.
Well, that's hydrocodone.
Oxycodone,
and in the smallest dose typically is a 10 milligram, and that's an extended release tablet, so it's only once every 12 hours. Mm-hmm. The cost per dose is a whopping 8 cents, mm-hmm. or for a 7 day 14 tablet, $1.05. And then for, it's not the top end, but it's one of the highest doses commonly given. A 40 milligram dose, we're talking 30 cents per tablet or $4.20 mm-hmm. for a week's supply. Mm-hmm. That is, folks, that's nothing.
Yeah.
And when you consider, we look at the fiscal income or fiscal note, the fiscal impact, there's no impact to the general fund. Everything to fund these programs and the operating costs will come out of the tax collected. And they're estimating, and this scares me.
And this is for the state of Idaho.
This is only the state.
Only the state of Idaho.
The gross tax revenue, what they expect to collect
from that, from those pennies on the dollar,
from those pennies on the dollar or pennies on the tablet, based on the 2017 MME levels entering the state of Idaho. The estimated revenue is $4.98 million.
$4.98 million.
$5 million.
So that kind of gives us an idea of how many people are taking.
Well, how many
prescription opiates, yeah, or how many are coming in, or whatever, yeah, you know, it's a big number.
How many are shipped in? Yeah.
So, tell us, Johnny. Do you know what? I mean, we talked a little bit about where that money's going to go to.
Right.
So it's going to go to helping fund the recovery centers. There's,
right,
I believe, 9 of them,
right,
in Idaho. And also the health and welfare will receive some help because they also have programs for addiction. And
the money will be
basically to help people who end up having a problem.
Right, right. And some of it goes to, you know, the state offices that up until this point have just had to say there's no beds.
Mm.
You know, they'll be able to create beds. They'll be able to do a greater outreach to physicians to make sure that they understand, mm-hmm. you know, the importance of keeping track and talking. And I hope to God, you know, the Department of Health and Welfare also investigates physicians mm-hmm. who are, you know, over prescribing.
Right.
You know, opioid addiction it knows no boundaries when it comes to what you do for a living.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could be 4 foot 11 and 3/4
right.
and weigh like 106 and, you know,
right.
it doesn't discriminate against size, gender,
sex,
or nothing.
Yeah.
Age, nope, none of it.
Right. Or profession.
Or profession. That's exactly
police
right.
Police officers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Judges.
Mm-hmm. Anyone.
Doctors. And, you know, obviously if, you know, a doctor is sympathetic and let's face it, dope addicts and alcoholics, we can be really dramatic and convincing when it comes to explaining what a, you know, great deal of pain we're in and what we need to help us, you know, just get by on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, it's time that, you know, we kind of pull up our pants and say, you know, okay, I'm willing to pay, you know, even if the drug companies, which typically they do, they pass that, you know, cost along, you know, they build mm-hmm. it into the price of their products.
And it's what
business does.
Yeah, and it's a consumption tax. It's not like everyone in Idaho is paying on this. It's
right.
It's if you're using this medicine.
Right, right. It's moving on because if you're using this medicine, you know, you also stand mm-hmm. to be, you know, addicted mm-hmm. down the road to it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm quite certain that a majority of people, you know, to break their arm, take the drugs for a couple of days and that's it. That's
yeah.
that's all they care about. And
mm-hmm.
and you and I were talking about people we've known that you know, I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
oh, yeah.
it makes me sick. I'm
yeah.
not gonna take it.
There's lots of people that have adverse effects to it. They just it's unpleasant for them. Anything from vomiting to it just makes them too tired or it's cloudy on their brain and they just can't do it. You know.
Right.
I know someone waiting for surgery who's just like, I just cannot take that stuff. You know?
Right.
So, you know, it affects people differently.
Right. Right. And, you know, a hammer into the forehead, you know, it's not always mm-hmm. a better option, but,
right.
you know, so there's, you know, there's going to be times where, you know, despite our best efforts to avoid it, you know, we can be affected by
yeah.
it.
Yeah, I mean, you could wind up having, you know, some kind of serious surgery. I mean, you have open heart surgery, knee replacements. There's some different kinds of things. I mean, in NA, when I first started, there were a few people who had some surgeries done. I heard both kinds of situations. Some of them just didn't take any at all after their surgeries. And then some of them basically had accountability with, you know, of course, most addicts will let their doctors know that they have an issue with whatever they do. I certainly did. And then there's some accountability. So usually like the doctor knows and, you know, that you talk about what's going to work. And then there's someone at home or a friend or somebody that comes and kind of makes sure that you're doing it, going about it the way that you need to. Just so you have some support, somebody to walk with, somebody to talk to, somebody you can say, you know, it's really hard, you know, or whatever.
Right.
Just so you're not in it alone, because alone, your brain might say, let's just, you know, whatever, you know,
right.
who knows?
Right.
So, I mean, there are ways to be in recovery. I've, you know, that I've heard that, you know, that are better situations, you know, but really it's just making sure that you talk about what you already know has in the past been a problem for you. But yeah, like surgeries happen. Some things are unavoidable for that kind of stuff, you know? I mean, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, it's not as if these drugs do not have, you know, a place
right.
and a purpose and mm-hmm. you know, a positive outcome on you know, people's physical recovery from, mm-hmm. you know, terrible accidents
yeah.
or, you know, broken bones and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Because the sooner you can get back to doing those things you normally do, typically the better your brain feels, the better you feel, the healing process moves on.
Right.
And even for those people where it kicks their butt and they're like, oh, I'm so tired when I take it. Well, maybe you need to lay down and heal for a while.
Yeah, that's
you
true
know,
too.
Jogging yeah. might be out for a while, Mrs. Jones, with right. your brand new knee. You may have to you may have to just relax and you know, do your physical therapy as assigned. And maybe you want to take a little of that narcotic pain reliever before you do your physical therapy, so the work you do there can, you know, can be as good as it possibly
be,
can
yeah.
be, so you're not fighting the pain. You know, I've had situations where I've been in pretty severe pain and gotten you know, strong narcotic pain relievers. You know, it was never my thing as far as an addiction goes, and I mean, I was always conscientious that, yeah, you know, this is really clean laboratory heroin, you know. It's right. not really any different in that sense, and I'm, you know, not sticking it in my arm or other orifices, and I'm not taking it to get high. But I tell you what, I could certainly understand why people could.
Yeah.
I mean, it you know, you get that incredible rush of dopamines into your brain.
Cuts out your pain receptors.
Yeah, and. Actually, the
I guess maybe it mentally cuts out some pain receptors too. I don't really know.
Well, it acts on the central nervous system, and what it does is it floods your brain with the feel good chemical dopamine, which you know, when they say it blocks the pain receptors, well, when your system's flooded with dopamine, the pain receptors stop working because there's nothing, the chemical to transfer the pain signals is essentially blocked by the
right.
dopamines. Now, when you're not in pain and you get a flood of dopamines, you just feel
right.
on
you're
top
just
of
off
the world.
Off and running.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're extremely, you know.
And I think for me, it also like kind of, you know, as things went on and things started getting chaos, it would block the problems and just make it to where you didn't have to feel the pain from them,
right,
really.
Right.
So, like, I'm thinking emotionally too.
It's okay.
It'll be okay. Let's just take another pill.
Yeah, exactly. My mother died of cancer, and near the very end of her life, when she was in the hospital, just shortly before she died, she was on like a constant morphine drip. Boy, she was happy. Nothing's up, oh, Mom, you're gonna die. I feel bad. Oh, that's all right.
Yeah,
you know,
right?
It's like, wow, okay. If that's you know, if you can face death with a smile like that, you know, I mean, there were other things going on in her mind. You know, she had a pretty good run, but you know, still, who smiles at death, you know, in the face and just says, come on, let's go.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that kind of effect, you know, for somebody who just wants to, you know, move on, you know, go from day to day with, you know, and try and keep getting that feeling. But, you know, there's the sad part. It doesn't last. It doesn't last. You will get to the point where, you know, you're just dosing yourself just to, you know, to live,
because all that stuff in your brain, it changes, and you know, and the receptors change, and it's just, it winds up becoming a bit of a mess.
Yeah, a bit of a mess. Absolute clusterfuck.
Yeah, not really a brain specialist, but I've heard some different kinds of things, like it changes your receptors or the synapses, all just different kinds of bits and pieces, which, you know, I kind of wrap myself understanding around a little bit, but yeah, I'm not a specialist in that area, so I can't really explain it well. But it does change things.
But I think your layperson's description of it is as accurate as it needs to be for this radio program.
Right.
You know, yeah, it's going to rewire. It rewires your brain.
Something like I think it's your natural serotonin comes along or whatever it is. And then it's just like, oh, wait, we don't fit here. Where do we go? And
right,
you know what I mean?
Right.
So then that's what causes like the depression, is because then your natural stuff comes, because that gets kicked off every day, you know, whatever. There's times your cortisol, whatever. Anyways, and then it comes up in your brain to try to, you know, go into those receptors. And it's like, it doesn't fit anymore.
Right. Right.
And so then your natural serotonin is not working.
Right.
That sucks.
Yeah.
I remember that. That is not fun at all. So, and on a real quick note, I will say after, you know, being in recovery for 4.5 years that there's been some, you know, there's been some cruddy things that have happened. I mean, really, really not fun situations emotionally that have happened over this time, especially recently. And you know what? I'm still okay. And I'm still happy. My serotonin is working. My choices are better. My emotions are better. Mm-hmm. Like back then, it was like I couldn't even emotionally like fit the situation. It was so weird. No, you know what I mean? It was like either like super just, whatever. Oh, we're losing our house. Well, you know, or to just not even be able to get up out of bed. It's like the hormone imbalance or whatever in the world was happening in my body and my brain mm-hmm. was just upside down. I mean, I'm night and day. You can ask anybody who's known me from back then to now. Mm-hmm. Night and day.
Right, right.
Wow.
And, you know, when your answer to every question is, well, I'll just stab him in the throat. You know, it's... Yeah. It shows you that your brain is not working as well as it probably could.
Yeah, and I mean, and even if you're taking those things, you know, just I don't know, I'm not trying to quote block out a problem. It just still, I think, changes some people's chemistry and brains around. So I mean, just kind of the outcome for some people, anyways. So we had somebody stop in to share some information. I don't want to cut you short, but I'm thinking
we're
running low on time.
Let's go ahead and
want to give that a read. We got a special visit. From some people, and they wanted us to announce some information, and they brought us lemon pie and donuts. So, you know, that's always nice.
Hey, we if Paola
only ate half of one, but
of donuts and lemon pie, we're good with it.
Yeah,
and they were from food not bombs of the Palouse, and they are inviting people to join their mission for peace, community, and in the struggle for community space and food availability. They're a community-based movement that recovers perfectly good food that would otherwise be discarded and distributes it to the public as an act of solidarity. Food Not Bombs also organized to support issues that affect community and region. Let's see, they have... Meetings are on the fourth Monday of every month at North Star Financial Management, where I have no idea where that is, but it's at 6 p.m. And if you want, their next meeting's on July 23rd, so that's coming up next week. Mm-hmm. And probably your best bet is to check them out on Facebook, and they're at facebook.com/FNB. Palouse or FNB Palouse, and you can find out what they're doing and get involved. Mm-hmm. And I'll have to admit, the two folks that were here, young man, young woman, they mm-hmm. were real informative and quite friendly and sounded like they were passionate about this. Passionate about this mission they're on. So yeah. We wish them good luck. And,
absolutely.
Food Not Bombs. I kind of like that concept.
Yeah. And so, like, you know, if you want to help out with what they're doing or check out what they're doing, you can look them up. And then also, I believe if you're in need of some food, I think they can help you out as well. And as I was mentioning to them, you know, sometimes you're middle-class family or whatever, and things are pretty good, and money's, you know, coming in or whatever, but there could be somebody who got hurt, you got crazy doctor bills that month or something like that, and you just maybe need help for the month. Or there's situations where you know, finances aren't so great all year round. I mean, it's a variation of things, you know what I mean? So it sounds like they might be able to help out, and just help whoever's in need in the community, no matter what your situation is. They also mentioned that, you know, they don't ask about what your income is. They don't make you show or prove anything about it. I don't think there's any questions.
No filling out forms.
No, there's no questions asked.
Right. And you know, for people who want to get involved in this sort of thing, you know, go for it. Because although there's not a... I think the proportion of people eating well in this community to the portion of people not eating well in this community is pretty disproportionate. I think most of us eat pretty well here. So if you got some time and you want to help out, check this organization out. See if they See if the suit fits. If not, there's other places that you can work with too. And if you have more money than time, give them some money.
Yeah.
Certainly can hurt.
Yeah. Sounds good. Well, I like your topic that you picked today, Johnny. I think that,
thank you.
That
thank
was
you
good information
much.
And it's definitely something that, absolutely matters and affects people. I mean, on this show, I just want to say that, you know, you don't have to be an addict. But we are usually all know someone and can be affected by a friend or a family member or, you know, and so it seeps around, you know, or you could be in recovery and just kind of need some reminders or whatever the case may be. So
there
we're so grateful that you're listening to KRFP Recovery Radio in Moscow Pullman 90.3.
And we are out.